Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. So today's episode has been inspired by a young woman named Jennifer Ashley Wright. She is a feminist and a staunch defender of abortion rights, status quo on Roe versus Wade. And interestingly, as I did a little bit of research, also opposed to African trophy hunting. It's not really relevant to today's discussion, but it is worth noting that while I too find it abhorrent that people shoot giraffes, it's only by allowing high fence hunting of animals like the giraffe that preserves are able to be kept in place, anti-poaching efforts are able to be waged in order to protect the populations of the animals that are being hunted. So oddly, in fact, you'd think that hunting would be bad. Oddly, in fact, since the dawn of high fence hunting, tourist hunting in sub-Saharan Africa, the populations of hunted animals has increased. In most cases, to their highest ever overall population sizes. That seems contradictory, I suppose, but if you imagine for a moment that an elephant has no economic value to someone growing corn, and in fact it's a nuisance animal because as they stomp through your cornfield and destroy your corn crop, you're not a big elephant fan. But if the elephant has economic value in that you can sell a hunt for elephants to people from China, Russia, the United States, Canada, then there's a motivation to keep the animal alive. And so while I personally have no interest in hunting those animals, I'm glad that people are hunting them because otherwise they wouldn't exist. And what's happened since the Cecil the Lion incident is that people who want to go hunt game in Africa in high fence environments are being shamed in the West. And so they're not going because they don't want to have their businesses closed down or to be protested against or to be doxxed or to have their lives threatened. So it's led to layoffs of anti-poaching officers, which has led to more poaching. So whilst you virtue signal in Western social media that you're opposed to a woman hunting a giraffe, you are guaranteeing more dead giraffes. So well done there. But on to her bigger and better claim of the day. She's very upset at the idea that Trump might appoint a justice so conservative that they might be able to have a majority of the court reconsider Roe versus Wade. Now, currently, abortion is federally protected because of the Roe versus Wade decision in the 70s. The alternative would be that it would be a state's issue. So clearly there are states that would allow it, New York, California, Michigan, New Jersey, probably Pennsylvania, Massachusetts. And there's probably some that are kind of purpley states that are somewhat fiscally conservative, but pretty socially liberal. Minnesota. I don't know how it all breaks down, but Colorado, whatever. You get the idea. I'm sure Washington, Oregon would be all about it. And then other states wouldn't allow it at all because they've essentially tried to stop it already, including Arkansas, Texas, Mississippi. And that, to the pro-abortion feminists, is the worst. So she's demanding that women go on a sex strike in order to use sex transactionally, essentially to bribe or hold the men in their lives hostage into supporting abortion. It's a fantastic idea on a number of levels, and I don't mean that in the common colloquial version. I mean it's actually like look up fantastic in the dictionary. That's what I mean. So for one, she makes the point that in the past, these things worked. That might be the case if you were talking about wives and husbands in monogamous relationships. Because, you know, eventually the men would want to have sexual access to their wives and not force themselves upon them, and so there would be some sort of agreement at some point. In today's culture, in today's society, there's a dozen reasons why this is stupid. But I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea. I think that all single women should 100% abstain from all sexual activity until further notice. Well, I mean, it's because that's my position anyway. As a person who discovered the truth behind moral rules as an adult, and as a person who wishes they understood that as it. I did it to y'all again. Hold on. Okay, sorry about that. So what I've come to realize as an adult is that the moral rules, the biblical morality that we were taught sort of halfway as children and then as teenagers and young adults taught to shun as being oppressive and regressive and sort of killjoy rules are actually in place to save you from yourself. And the earlier you learn to delay gratification, the earlier you learn that your own pleasure isn't the most important thing in the world, the earlier you learn that some of these decisions, especially sexually, have dramatic and drastic emotional consequences for both parties, the probably better off you would be. I don't think we don't need biblical morality. I think that we need to explain it better to young people. You know, I have daughters, and I talk to my daughters about dating. You know, some of them are getting to be that age. I leave it up to them. I think if, at the point that they reach an age that their mother says that they're allowed to begin the process of dating, I leave it up to them. But what I try to talk to them about is that the modern dating relationship is a mock marriage intended to fail. So young people become a couple, they're boyfriend and girlfriend. They model out marriage, they model out monogamy, they model out exclusivity, they model out all the things that offshoot from that, jealousy and possessiveness, and eventually in most cases it becomes serious enough that it becomes physical, so then they model out the physical love relationship of a marriage, the entire time knowing full well they don't intend to marry the person. Which means that you intend to end the relationship, which is painful for everyone. And there's no lesson in it that teaches you anything that's of any value to your later on self. Your future self does not benefit from your experimentation in mock marriages designed to fail. It just doesn't. There's no benefit. So you cause yourself heartache and pain, and you learn no skills in the process that's going to help you later on in life. So personally, for me, I'm not a feminist. I've made this point abundantly clear. I make no claims to be a feminist. I have no interest in it. I personally believe that the best thing for women is, for one, to have the freedom to make choices as they desire. But for two, in most cases, the best thing for women and their happiness and their sanity is the most traditional arrangement possible. So I think with few exceptions, most women are happiest married mothers being provided for by men who understand fidelity and trust and their role as husbands, their role as fathers. I think in most cases that's as happy as a woman is going to be. I do not believe that women should not be allowed to do other things. I think they should be allowed to do as they please. Just as a man is allowed to do things that are not in his own best interest, I think a woman should be allowed to do things that are in her own best interest, including my own daughters. If they would like to go to law school and work 18 hours a day and make partner by the time they're 35, hey, so be it. I don't think that there's happiness there, but what do I know? Maybe they'll love it. Who am I to say? So the feminist position today is in stark contrast to that. The feminist position today is that men and women are in every possible way equals, that gender is a social construct, that there's no biological basis for gender, which is the silliest thing any person with an IQ above 90 says out loud. And they believe that women should act more like men. It's like Gavin McInnes says, basically the feminist movement is just making shitty men because they're not good at it. And the feminist movement encourages loose morality. The feminist movement encourages casual sexual encounters. The feminist movement encourages women to have careers and not be married. The feminist movement encourages abortion and for women not to have children. And if a woman should decide on her own, while having full ability to make other choices, to become a mother and a wife, that is shunned in modern feminism, and indeed in much of modern society. Which, if your movement was about women, you would want to support all women in all their choices. If your movement had anything to do with women, you would want women to have as much agency as is possible in society. And you would understand that women being individuals and different, that some would choose one path and some would choose another, and you would support all of that. There's so much evidence that feminism has nothing to do with women. It's odd that they still get away with calling it feminism. If you'd like to know how feminists, especially feminist ally men, feel about women, go read the things that are said to conservative women. Candace Owens, Dana Loach, Sarah Palin, Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter. I am not a feminist. I am 100% in favor of the patriarchy. I am 100% in favor of a masculine-dominated society. And I would never speak to a woman the way feminists speak to those women. Never. Because I respect them as individuals, which is the basis of the entire idea, right? A traditional male-female relationship can be oppressive. I understand that. It's possible that that can be an oppressive relationship. Done properly or done well, it is not an oppressive relationship. My wife would not ever say to you that she is oppressed by me, that she has no choices, that she can't do as she pleases. I work as hard as I work to provide the life that I do for my family, precisely so that my wife can do whatever she pleases. So if she wanted to go to work, she could go to work. If she wanted to not go to work, she could not go to work. If she wants to have free time to do things, if she wants, whatever she wants to do, she can do. There's no external pressure on her to do anything. And yet she's a stay-at-home mother. Theoretically, according to feminists, she has no economic power. But a proper and traditional relationship between men and women, especially husband and wife, doesn't involve power. That's not the point. Like, I'm 6'6", and I weigh 230 pounds. Obviously, if you're going to get down to just, like, raw nature, I have the power in the relationship. Why in the world would I wield it against my wife? And in the same way, economically, the same thing. Okay, so I have all the earning potential, but we are a team. We are a unit that goes through this life together. And she has a role, and I have a role, and we perform them. And there's a little friction here and there, and there's some negotiation back and forth. But essentially, at the end of the day, we do what we do. There is no oppression. I am not oppressed. I am not forced to go work. She is not oppressed. She is not forced to stay home. We are two human beings who love each other, who are choosing how best to function in the world. Now, my wife would be an outcast in a feminist community. 15 and a half years ago, she left a good job that paid well. She was upwardly mobile. She had been promoted. She probably would have been promoted again soon after that. additional responsibility, additional income, more economic freedom and power. And she chose to not have any of it. That's not something that feminists are able to celebrate. She chooses to be married to a man. She chooses to be the mother to 4 children. She chooses to be involved in the faith of our family, and then we go to church and all these things. These are not things that feminists support. Well, why not? My wife freely chose all of it. This is what she wanted. This is the life that she wanted. And I believe, for the most part, except for when I aggravate the shit out of her, she's pretty happy. Ah, sometimes the kids get on your nerves, you know? You got kids? You know what it's like. But generally speaking, so, if feminism was about women, they would support women like Dana Loach, Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, Sarah Palin, Candace Owens, who are successful, powerful women. But because they hold the wrong opinion about one or more issues, they're fair game to be called all kinds of despicable things. Death threats. And worst of all, the thing that feminists say they're the most against is the thing that most commonly see. They're called whores, sluts. These feminists wish rape upon them. It's mind-boggling. So we get back to the feminist movement. The feminist movement provided freedom for women. Got them out of the kitchen, where they were slaves. Out in the world, where they're free to have many casual sexual encounters. And a career. And to delay or to avoid altogether marriage and motherhood, all these things, these bad things that were bad for women. They fixed it in the 70s, in the 80s, maybe part of the early 90s. Feminism was successful. Women today can go to college. They don't have to listen to their dads. They don't have to get married. They can have careers in the big city. They can have casual and sexual encounters with many men that they don't know. So, you would think the data and statistics would support the idea that women today, who we all agree are much freer and achieve much, much more than perhaps they ever thought they would, than ever before in human history. Women in Western societies today can do anything they please, and no one will stop them. So how's that working out? All right, so let's get into the data. Self-reported, since 1972, women's happiness has declined. Oddly, male happiness has increased. So now, obviously, happiness is not a single thing. It's not one factor. But you have to think at some point, casual sexual relationships, understanding the temperament and the psychology of both men and women, it would make sense that more casual sexual relationships might make men happier and women less happy. Perhaps. Also, marriage is being delayed. Women marry 32% later than they did in 1960. Which men also do. So perhaps that plays into male happiness. Perhaps it doesn't. I don't know. They have done a poll every year since 1975 of women. The percentage of women who have indicated that they are very satisfied with their life has been steadily declining since 1975, since they began the study. Well, why? That doesn't make any sense. We've got abortion and birth control and casual sexual encounters and 12-hour workdays and careers. And you're out of the kitchen and you have no children. Why would you be not very satisfied? Well, because as it turns out, that's not what women actually want. Interestingly also, and who could have predicted this? I mean, let's be honest. There's no way to predict this would happen. But with the increase and the common the commonality of casual sexual encounters between adults, males and females. STDs have skyrocketed. I mean, who would have thought? Man, that's crazy. So in this era, we have condoms, they're everywhere, they give them away, yada yada, blah blah blah. STDs through the roof. The highest ever on record. Previously, the highest on record was sometime in the 1940s when there was a syphilis outbreak. We've exceeded it. So, STDs are record high. Women are getting married 32% later. Record number of few women surveyed claim to be very satisfied. Women's happiness has declined every year since 1972. So at what point does the feminist movement stop, look around, take stock of the wasteland they've left in their wake, and change tactics? Well, never. Because, like I've said at least 100 times, feminism has nothing to do with women. Just like abortion has nothing to do with women. Women know that they are pregnant and have a baby inside of them. The fact that you keep screaming over and over again that it's not a baby doesn't make that true. And the psychological data and surveys that have come out for post-abortion women is not promising. Having an abortion is not the pathway to freedom and frolicking and carefree happiness that these feminists want to tell you that it is. I mean, who advocates for abortion besides Jennifer Ashley Wright, whatever her name is? Who in the world advocates for abortion? Well, a lot of feminist men seem to advocate for abortion. Well, that seems odd. Why would they want it? Oh, right, because they want to have sex with no responsibilities whatsoever. That might explain the STD increase. Huh, who would have thought? Crazy, crazy. I've talked about before, women want men to be men. All women want men to be men. So when a woman, like Jennifer Ashley Wright, or some other woman, demands that men behave a certain way, or bow down, or be quiet, or do what they're told, or believe what they're told to believe, or follow women blindly, they don't mean it. That's not what they want. They might think they want that. And I'm not being a misogynist. I'm not saying women exclusively don't know what they really want. A lot of people don't know what they really want. That's not uncommon for people to not know what they really want. So these feminist women who go out and demand men do this, that, and the other thing don't actually want a man in their life that listens to them or is obedient, isn't a man. I mean, I listen to my wife. I don't obey my wife. Does that make sense? There's a difference. We can have a discussion. She can convince me that the way she sees something is better or more correct or more prudent or whatever the case may be. But if she demands I do something, I will not do it just because she demanded it. And although in the moment that might make her mad, I think overall it makes her more confident in who I am. Does that make sense? She might not like that I laugh at her when she tells me to do something and say, no, I'm not doing it. But she does like the idea that she has a man in her life with a backbone. That her husband is somebody who won't do what he's told. Even if in the moment she doesn't like it. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay, I'm not talking about your cousin Barbara, who's the attorney in New York City and made partner when she was 30 and is a multimillionaire. I am not talking about your sister's roommate from college who's gone on to get a PhD in mathematics from MIT. I am talking about regular women. Most women. The majority of women. The majority of women are happiest as wives to strong, confident, compassionate, caring men who have a crystal clear understanding of their actual role as a masculine figure in a patriarchal society. Meaning they're not corrupted. It's not abusive. And as mother to children being raised in tandem, in partnership with that husband, the father of those children. In the same way that most men would be happiest raising their children with their children's biological mother, and the mother understands her role as mother and wife. And again, this is not a overbearing, dominant, oppressive relationship. But she understands that she has a role, he has a role, everyone does their thing. That's how we are designed. We are set up to do that. That's not to say that a woman can't do all those things and have a job or a career or do something else or whatever the case may be. I'm not suggesting that women can't make choices. They 100% can make choices. As far as I'm concerned, they can choose to go out and never have children and never get married and have casual sex their whole lives and be as miserable as they want to be and hang around with all the beta soy latte boys they want. Go ahead. Have a field day. You're going to be miserable for your whole life. Go right ahead. So, how do I know that women are happier with manly men? How do I know that women want masculine men in their lives? They want their partner to be a masculine man. They want their father to be a masculine man. They want the men around them to be men. To be protectors and defenders and providers. To be fearless and have a spine. That is what they want. How do I know? Because women tell you that's what they want. There was a study done of women and what man or men they prefer. And universally, all women, even women who self-identify as third wave feminists, prefer men who are chivalrous and protective. What does that mean? Chivalrous and protective. Well, protective is pretty crystal freaking clear. No matter what a woman says, no matter what she says she believes, no matter what has gone on in her life, she is acutely biologically aware of the fact that she is physically inferior to most men. Yes, there are exceptions, I know. But there are not very many exceptions. I understand that you want to believe that men are not physically superior in strength and endurance to women. I totally get it. And maybe in endurance you're right, I don't know. But when it comes to brute strength, men are stronger. Sorry. It's just biology. It has to do with testosterone and bone structure and a bunch of different things. It is what it is. And every woman, even if she says she's not, is acutely aware of this fact. That she's vulnerable. And so, what does a woman want? Well, she wants somebody who, when there's a noise downstairs at 3 o'clock in the morning, will get up and go down there and find out what's going on. Someone she is confident will return no matter what they find down there. And yeah, I know, there's exceptions. There's big, tough, strong women. There's women who've been in the military, been trained with firearms, hand-to-hand combat, and all these things. That's not the majority of women. And those women, if you talk to them, I guarantee you the majority of them also would like a husband who's bigger, tougher, and stronger than they are. Just because a woman goes off and joins the military and learns how to handle the firearms and learns how to do 100 push-ups and can do 35 or 40 or 50 pull-ups, it doesn't mean that she feels no need for to be protected. So what is she going to do? She's probably going to go out and find a guy who's bigger and stronger than she is. So it's no different. And chivalrous is the rest of what I was talking about. It's that dominant but not oppressive dynamic. The idea of being in control, of being a decision maker, of being a provider without being a tyrant. Women are not saying they want some brooding, hulking tyrant of a man in their life. They're saying they want a man who is chivalrous and protective. They want a man who looks out for their physical well-being and their children's physical well-being and is fully capable of defending them both, while at the same time choosing to be a gentleman. While at the same time choosing to take into account not only her physical safety, but her emotional well-being. And chivalry is not holding doors, although that may be part of it. Chivalry is the idea, like the patriarchy, that as a man you have a responsibility to protect the vulnerable. So even third wave feminists, who will get on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and God only knows where and scream and yell, but they demand men do this and demand men do that and you better and you better, you better. At the end of the day, she wants a man who's chivalrous and protective. It's biological. It's just one of those things. That's why the beta soy latte kids sort of grovel at the feet of these feminist women for a decade, only to find that she married some guy who works on Wall Street, who can bench 250 pounds, and drives a BMW. Has a big house in the suburbs. And these guys are like, what happened? I don't understand. She's left us. No, no, she didn't. She did what was in her best interest. She found a man who intrigued her, and she pursued him. That's how it works. That's biology. So back to the original point. She is calling for women to stop this behavior. The very behavior that feminism pushed them to pursue. The very behavior that's made women generally, over the last 40 years, less satisfied with their lives, less happy, married later, fewer children, more STDs, more stress, higher suicide rate. All the negative results of feminism, this woman, Jennifer Ashley, right, is saying, let's pull it all back. Not only pull it all back, I demand that you women abstain from having premarital sex with men. She's demanding that they take a purity pledge. The very thing that they criticize evangelical Christian families for doing with their daughters. The promise ring ceremony. There's a bunch of different versions of it. But essentially the idea is that you get your daughters to, and I guess you maybe shouldn't single out your daughters, should be sons too, but you get your daughters to understand the value of their chastity. Understand the value of their virtue. And to not give it away cheap. And they get them to make a vow to abstain until they're married. Widely criticized by the entire left, especially feminism, especially feminists. And here you have a feminist who's cheerleading abortion, telling women to take a purity pledge and abstain. And I'm all for it. Please, don't stop abstaining. All you single girls out there, stop having casual sex with men. It makes you less happy. It makes you less fulfilled. It makes you as an individual less valuable to men. It makes you less interesting, less intriguing. It makes you less married. It makes a lot of negative things. So Jennifer is right. You should abstain and demand that the men in your life support abortion or you won't have sex with them. But you should make a second rule for yourself. And the second rule for yourself is be, you shouldn't have sex with any man who will give in to your demands, who will obey you. So there you go. Don't have sex with a man unless he obeys you, and don't have sex with men who obey you. And then find yourself a nice, protective, chivalrous man who understands his responsibilities, who understands his role in society, in your relationship, and his future as a father, and marry that man. And then you don't have to abstain from anything. And he'll have an opinion about abortion independent of yours. And you might be in favor of it, and he might be opposed to it, or you both might be in favor, or you both might be opposed, or you might be opposed and he might be in favor. Who knows how it plays out? But because you've chosen wisely, because you've been judicious, he'll have his own opinion that he's formed himself. And he'll be your husband. And you'll be happier. And then if you want to pursue a career, pursue a career. If you want to be a mother, be a mother. If you want to do both, you know, work part-time or start your own charity or volunteer at the PTA, whatever it is that you want to do, do it. And you'll know that you have this chivalrous and protective man who's providing for you and your children, so you don't have to worry about it. And life will be better. So, abortion is evil. Killing babies is wrong. Killing the most vulnerable members of a society, the unborn, is the wrongest thing that we've ever done as a society. Of all the ills of the past that people want to bring up that we've done, this is by far the worst thing we've ever done as a species. But if you could take this moment and step back from it and realize, turn around, look at the wreckage in your wake, look at the destruction feminism has wreaked upon the modern woman. Not all. I get it. I know. Not all. And here's your chance to fix it. Here's your chance to return things the way they were supposed to be. Where men had to put out effort and prove themselves virtuous and chivalrous and protective in order to earn your favor. And that you would then choose a husband who you thought most likely to provide and protect, who you thought most likely to be a good father, both biologically and in his behavior and his actions. And you can have a traditional marriage relationship. And also, because like I've said before, the patriarch is a negotiation, and now we've negotiated the point, and also whatever else it is that you want. You also can be a career woman. You also could be not a career woman. You also could, whatever it is that you want to do. You can have it all. But please believe me when I tell you, it starts with rejecting feminism. It starts with rejecting the idea that casual sexual encounters are good for women. It starts with rejecting the idea that casual sexual encounters are good for society. It starts with rejecting the idea that killing your own baby is good for anybody. It starts with rejecting the idea that you want to be a CEO or you want to be a partner in a law firm by the time you're 35. Because quite frankly, nobody wants that. Who the hell wants to work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week? Nobody. Not men, not women, just some freaks. That we've decided to hold up as being somehow virtuous because they earn lots of money. Let them have it. Let them have the money. That's fine. You don't want that. Who the heck wants that? Stop listening to these feminists who tell you that's what you want. That's not what you want. We all want the same thing. We want to feel safe in the world and able to pursue the thing that we want to do. That's what we want. That's what you want. That's what I want. That's what everyone wants. And we all have a role to play. We all have responsibilities in that. It's just how it works. So I 100% support Jennifer Ashley Wright's Purity Challenge. Purity Pledge Challenge for all you ladies. Listen, I hope you have a fantastic day. Thank you for tuning into the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Or if you are a third wave feminist and you hated it, do me a favor, tell all your friends to come listen to it so that you guys can get together and have like book club meetings and talk about how evil I am. Talk to you tomorrow.